Welcome to the July 2009 session of the International MD Support Group, which now serves over 3,600 low-vision seniors in more than 200 Internet affiliate groups, and about 60 men and women who are members of our new telephone support group. We are by far the largest live support group in the world, and it's all due to the work and the caring of the individual at each center who makes sure this information gets to you. That person is standing there with you today. I hope you'll always remember to thank your facilitator for that. I also hope you're enjoying the social aspect of these monthly get-togethers and that you will tell others about us at every opportunity. I'm very pleased to bring back Colleen O'Donnell for her third presentation to our group. Her talk today on the importance of memory to living with low vision promises to be her best so far, full of valuable information that we can begin applying in a practical way to our everyday lives. Colleen is an occupational therapist and a certified low vision therapist who is an important part of the Henry Ford Health System Visual Rehabilitation and Research Center in Detroit, Michigan. As an occupational therapist for 31 years, Colleen had worked with older adults in the home, community, mental health, and long-term care settings prior to specializing in visual rehabilitation 11 years ago. She has lectured at professional conferences, community settings, and to occupational therapy students. Colleen has published in the Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, contributes to the American Foundation for the Blind's Senior Site website, and has been published in OT Practice, which is a publication of the American OT Association. Welcome back to our group, Colleen. We look forward to your presentation today.
I'm very happy to be here today. I think this subject is very exciting, and I hope everyone gets something out of it that you can use in your everyday life. Memory, what we're going to talk about today is the aging brain, and how you can use your memory not only as a substitute for vision, but to enhance the vision that you have and to keep your brain healthy. The goals today include looking at the aging brain and the good news and research that has been done recently about how our brains function. We're going to talk a little bit about what is memory, also what is learning and memory, what is the difference between those two, what you can do to enhance your overall brain function, what you can do to enhance your memory, and how you can use your memory to compensate for your vision loss. The field of geriatrics is a relatively new field, and the study of geriatrics is looking at how we age and what happens to our bodies, and now what happens to our minds as we get older. So in the 20th century, the emphasis on geriatrics began in the 1970s, and they looked at, first of all, how to improve the health of the aging body. Now the emphasis in the 21st century has looked at more and more often, how are we improving the health of the aging mind? As an example of this, I have a quote here from Sigmund Freud in 1907, and at that time he said, about the age of 50, the elasticity of the mental process on which treatment depends is, as a rule, lacking. Old people are no longer educable. Now, Sigmund Freud wrote this at the tender age of 51. So apparently, although he thought we stopped learning at age 50, he was exempt from that, I guess. Now, however, the emphasis is very different. Dr. Finch, who's an expert in neurobiology of aging, states that if you don't have a specific disease that causes loss of nerve cells, then most, if not all, of the neurons remain healthy until you die. That's a big change, and it has only come about in the last 10 years. So really, as the turn of this century has occurred, we're getting like tons of information about what is going on in our mind as we age. Just a very brief overview of what your brain entails. There's 100 billion nerve cells, and each of those 100 billion nerve cells receives 100 messages per second. These messages are sent via synapses, which are cells that connect the different neurons, these 100 billion neurons, to each other. Dendrites are branches on these nerve cells that transmit information from synapse to synapse. Okay, these branches are found on the end of the synapses, and they transmit the information via chemical reactions. Okay, the other thing about the brain that I just want you to remember, to think about, is that the brain has many areas of specialization. For example, it's an area that is a primary source for visual information. These different areas talk to each other as well through these dendrites or these branches. Some of the changes that are occurring in the brain as we age, which may be considered somewhat negative changes, include the fact that the brain mass itself, the amount of brain matter, shrinks. Certain types of matter, certain types of cells may decrease. The actual number of these dendrites or message cells, they believe, decreases. And the transmission of information from neuron to neuron slows down. And that's probably the key, how quickly this information moves throughout the brain. The good news, what this brain research has been going on in the last 10 years or so, there are three aspects of what they're finding out about how the brain works. One is brain plasticity, or the brain's ability to adapt to changes. The second is neurogenesis, or the brain's ability to grow new cells. And the third is an acronym, which I'll explain a little bit later, called HERALD. Just briefly, the brain plasticity, we're finding that the aging brain continues to have a remarkable ability to grow, adapt, and change patterns of these connector cells, and also that the dendrites themselves, the little branches, lengthen. In terms of neurogenesis, a team of American and Swedish scientists demonstrated for the first time that new brain cells are generated in adult humans, and that was in 1998 only. Old neurons can grow dendrites to compensate for losses, and in this way increase the number of dendrites. This process begins in the 40s and 50s and decreases as we get into our 80s and 90s, but is still occurring. So this ability to generate new cells and new connections continues, they believe, till death. Therefore, because they believe that the brain is plastic and can grow new connections and make new connections, problems they feel arise when these synapses or these connector cells lie dormant. So therefore, the less you use certain connections, the more likely disrepair or degeneration will occur. So keep that in mind, those of you who are couch potatoes, and I'll explain a little bit more as we go along. The third aspect about changes in the aging brain is called HERALD. And HERALD stands for Hemispheric Asymmetry Reduction in Older Adults. that's a mouthful. But to give you an idea of what that means, the brain is divided into a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere, two separate sections. So it's all, like right down the middle of the brain, okay? And in general, the left hemisphere deals with concrete functions that can be observed. It deals with our ability to sequence steps in a task, our ability to understand math and shapes, and the concrete meaning of a word. The right hemisphere, on the other hand, is programmed so that we understand abstract information and the perception of our individual self in the environment. So with the right hemisphere, we learn to interpret symbols, we learn to interpret visual information and how the brain perceives it, spatial information. We learn the symbolic meaning of a joke or a story. And we also learn to identify nonverbal communication, such as verbal tones or gestures. Now, as we're younger, in earlier in life, we tend to use one hemisphere at a time. So if we're working on a task that has to do with math and real concrete information, say putting together a wooden toy, then you're using the left side of your brain. The right side of the brain has to do with symbols. So if you're writing poetry, if you're listening to a fairy tale, that's the right side of the brain. What happens now, they believe in the aging brain, is that we tend to use both hemispheres. So we work both sides of the brain to get together and make connections. The other thing that we're learning about the brain is that life experiences literally shape the brain. This plasticity that we've been talking about is the brain's ability to adjust its structure to reflect what we experience. It's believed now that we can deliberately activate nerve cell connections when something is important to us emotionally. PET scans have shown that different areas of the brain light up as the individual experiences specific emotions. The other thing about emotions is that it is directly connected to learning. The other advantage of growing older is that we experience an emotional maturity. And we find that negative emotions are less intense. We learn to, pick our battles if we're going to fight. We pay less attention to negatives than to positives. Emotional stimuli, and we're less likely to remember negative than positive emotional information. So we want things to be positive, and our brain kind of moves in that direction. Another aspect of the aging brain is wisdom, and we've heard this, over and over again, but now we're getting specific information about what wisdom entails. And Dr. Gene Cohen has done a lot of work in this area. He believes that wisdom is a combination of factors. First of all, that we develop a broader attention span as we age. We become better problem solvers. We learn to transfer information and life experiences and use that from one situation to another. We become more original thinkers. Because we don't filter and set priorities automatically, we kind of think out of the box more often. So you combine this with the greater store of information that we've accumulated over the years, and Dr. Cohen believes that is wisdom. James McGough from the University of Southern California says that wisdom compensates for some memory loss, like the slowness that occurs with how the information gets distributed throughout the brain. Because wisdom is a dense and rich network of associations that has been developed through a lifetime of experiences. Therefore, he believes, we can make the brain work better simply by accumulating more knowledge, which therefore builds more networks of connections in the brain. And the wisdom we acquire can compensate for some of these other decline in the mass of the brain and some of the other things that occur gradually. What is memory? Our views on what memory is has changed also. 20 years ago, we interpreted memory as a computer with the filing system. So information would come in, be placed in storage, and then pulled out when we needed it. However, now they're finding that memory is not so much fact-based, is not just a fact-based record of reality. It is the result of coding of different experiences by a network of multiple brain structures. And some of the research is showing us that memories are not literal recordings of reality because, first of all, family members We call specific events that, you know, all members of the family participated in. Each member will recall them differently, and some may forget, you know, that particular instance totally. People rarely remember details accurately. You know, there's a lot of information going on in terms of eyewitness accounts. How reliable are those? And people sometimes recall events that make a general sense or fit their expectations of what should have occurred. So memory is a process. Three steps. First of all, we learn the information. The information comes in through our senses. Secondly, we're going to store that information, code it, and that process is called encoding. And then the third step of memory is the ability to recall it when you need it. There are two types of memory, primary or short-term memory or working memory. This is very brief. It's when that sensory information comes in. The second type of aspect of memory is secondary memory. This is long-term or storage of information. Primary memory, short-term or working memory, is initial registration of sensory information. It's a moment-to-moment awareness. Some experts believe that the input, about 40% of it is visual. Others I've heard up to 90%. There's little difference in short-term memory between young and old adults. In general, we remember 7 items for 30 seconds, and that's about the span of a telephone number. Short-term memory also plays a role in searching and looking up archived information or information that is stored in long-term memory. Encoding is that second step of memory, and this is where the brain takes the information and puts it in a format so it can be put into long-term or stored memory. Short-term memory only lasts for seconds unless it is encoded and then stored. We can better encode information by associating it with previous knowledge that already exists in memory storage. And the human memory system is built so that individuals are more likely to remember what is important to them. Okay, the other idea about encoding is that we use different areas of the brain, and this is a new realization in research when we process information to put into long term. So, for example, you see an animal, say a new kitten, and how you put that idea of that new kitten into your long-term memory or storage is, first of all, you're going to categorize that kitten primarily by its appearance, and that involves the occipital lobe or your visual processing. Then you're going to categorize it by the sounds that it makes. That's the temporal or auditory lobe. You're going to process the way that animal feels to touch, and that's the parietal lobe. Lastly, you may process that information about how the animal moves. So one of the things I want you not to forget during this talk is that humans remember events like a giant jigsaw puzzle, so that we assemble that puzzle when we're getting ready to keep that memory and put it in long-term storage. So many areas of the brain are involved in putting that jigsaw puzzle together. Okay, another aspect of secondary memory or long-term memory is recall and recognition. Recall is your ability to retrieve information from storage without any cues. Recognition is your ability to retrieve this information with some orienting cues. Some of the problems that we see in terms of memory, which is part of the aging process, starts at about age 50. And here we start seeing where we do have some problems with retrieval of information from your long-term memory. And this is because recall, or your ability to pull out information without cues, becomes a little more difficult. And where you may see this is that, you know, you come into a room and you think, well, why did I come into this room? And you have to stop and give yourself some cues, maybe retrace your steps before you can pull out that information that you had a couple of minutes ago. Sometimes this process of difficulty with recall is called old-timers recall. And some of the things that you may have experienced, I know I have, are forgetting newly learned facts, forgetting the names of new acquaintances, misplacing objects, forgetting a telephone number, or forgetting what you intended to do minutes after deciding. Signs of difficulty with recall, or the ability to retrieve information without cues, is nothing to worry about, okay? It may also be a sign of distraction, feeling restless, or maybe being anxious in a social situation. You can use some of the tips we're going to discuss today to help you improve your attention to incoming information, or provide yourself with cues to pull information out of this long-term secondary memory storage. Where people start to have problems, and therefore warning signs of dementia or a more serious memory deficit, would be some of the things listed in this slide. For example, forgetting routine things constantly, trouble learning new things, forgetting how to do things you've done 1,000 times, having a hard time keeping track of the events of the days, especially significant things that have happened during that day, using the same phrases or repeating stories over and over in conversation, and having difficulty with more complex cognitive tasks, such as managing your finances or making important decisions. So what is learning? Learning occurs when neuron connectors or synapses in the brain speak to each other. And the more you use these synapses, the stronger they get, the longer the branches of connector cells get. The hippocampus is an area of the brain very deep in the brain which processes information before it is stored. So this is where that encoding occurs. Again, it works best when you are alert or emotionally interested. And the hippocampus is a coordinating area and pulls information from a variety of areas of the brain. So the second thing I want you not to forget today is that human memory is built so that individuals remember what is most important to them. Staying Sharp is a program that AARP has developed along with the Dana Alliance for Brain Research. And it is, they're looking at ways to promote cognitive fitness, especially in later years. And some of the ideas that they're promoting is education about brain health, the fact that you need to challenge your brain, you need to stay engaged in your environment and with other people, you need to continue to learn new things, and you need to expand your horizons or the types of experiences that you have. General tips for a healthy brain, and this information I've accumulated from a number of resources. First of all, you want to increase the learning you have during life. You want to be a lifelong learner. These kind of tips will decrease the risk of you developing memory-related problems as you get older. All right, you also want to stop once in a while and think about thinking. All right, be aware of how you think. Concentrate on the details of what you're doing. Live in the moment. You know, stop and smell the flowers. Slow yourself down a little bit and be more aware of your surroundings. The other aspect is that they do suggest, many of the experts, that you get tested for Alzheimer's if it is in your family, because there are a number of medications that can help slow the progression, as well as complementary medicine, such as herbal remedies that they're thinking now has an impact on delaying the progression. Mentoring, you're more likely to retain information if you have to explain it to someone else. So, share that wisdom that you have developed over the years and get involved in volunteer activities, reminiscing, writing your memories down. I had a client who she was having memory problems in addition to her vision loss, and she wanted to start recording her favorite family recipes. So that's something we worked on. Some other tips for a healthy brain have to do with the mind-body connection. And these are some suggestions by Dr. Michael Warrison and Dr. Mehmet Oz. Anything that you do that is healthy for your body, for example, reducing your blood pressure and cholesterol, will also help your mind, your brain stay healthy. Intense body and mind exercises, so activities that involve some thinking while you're moving, self-defense classes, learning new dance routines, tennis, those kind of things. You want to look at detoxing your system. There's a lot of information now coming out on additives and pollutants that may directly affect your brain as well as your body. Humor, telling a joke, that can make a significant difference. And map your mind. Visualize in your head. Draw a map of what you're going to do. This is especially helpful if you have vision loss and are not sure about the accuracy of the visual information that's coming in. Use the visual pictures that are already in your head. Anything that you do that is heart healthy will also be brain healthy. So the American Heart Association, ABC, avoid tobacco, be more active, and choose good nutrition will also help your brain. Okay, lifestyle changes that you can do now, regardless of your age, that will help prevent memory loss is looking at mental activity, challenge your thinking, challenge your brain, looking at physical conditioning, whatever level of physical activity you're at, try to up it, discuss it with your doctor, of course. Reduce the stress. That's probably the single most unidentifiable part of this that will affect your brain and how you develop your memory. Find where the connection is with stress. What happens to you when stress does affect you? Do you become short of breath? Does your stomach become upset? Take a deep breath and then move on. There's also some information about a healthy brain diet and antioxidants, that kind of nutrition they believe now may also help your brain. Dr. Gene Cohen has got a couple of books out, The Creative Mind and The Aging Mind, and he's done a lot of work on being creative, how that is very important as we get older. He also agrees that exercising mentally and physically, getting involved in challenging leisure activities, and establishing strong social networks will help you keep your brain fit. The benefits of physical exercise are numerous, and I won't spend a lot of time on this slide, but you can see they deal with emotional, physical, and brain fitness. Some other benefits of physical exercise, and I think the most important thing here is, again, that connection. Anything that gives you more oxygen to your body and helps blood flow in the body will therefore bring oxygen to your brain and help keep your brain healthy. And this is the third slide showing physical exercise and how it benefits us. Keep in mind that exercise does not just mean, getting on the treadmill. There's a number of activities that involve moderate physical intensity that is recommended as well. And things such as gardening, raking leaves, preparing meals, golf, all of these things can also give you that same benefits. Recommendations about physical exercise or activity, try to build up to 30 minutes a day. Moderate intensity, you want that heart pumping. You want to make it something that's enjoyable that you want to come to. And use a variety. Okay, this is a little bit of more information about creativity and some of Dr. Cohen's work. It's very common in later life. It's our ability to express ourselves. We want to take risks. We want to leave a legacy. It's a very powerful inner resource that can help you through a lot of periods of loss and stress. We'll talk a little bit here about what is mental or cognitive exercise. Anything that's novel and complex involves a cognitive workout. And some examples can be gardening, knitting. Knitting is one of the best ones. Journaling, dancing. There's a whole variety of activities that can be brain healthy. As you're working, you want to keep a track of endurance. You want to look at visual endurance and signs of problems with that, maybe tearing, eye fatigue, eye soreness, blurriness. That's telling you that it's time to take a stop, time to stop and take a little break. Signs of cognitive fatigue can be frustration, starting to make mistakes, a slower response. Physical fatigue can be, a sore back from sitting too long, your hands being sore. So keep in mind that these will affect your memory and your ability to process information. Okay, as we said briefly, stress is a very potent but often ignored contributor to memory loss. And there is a ton of information out there on stress. I think the most important thing is be aware of how stress affects your body and what your body and or mind is telling you when you become stressed. Chronic conditions that may also impact learning are pain, endurance, sleep deprivation. This processing or encoding that occurs happens mostly during sleep time. Oxygen deprivation, those of you that have pulmonary conditions, make sure you're getting enough oxygen but not too much, because that will also slow you cognitively. Look at the medications you have and their side effects. Make sure that you're drinking enough water and that you're eating right. And watch out for substance abuse. Some of the strategies that you can do personally for yourself to help you learn better, especially when there's some very important information. You want to give yourself time. You want to make sure you do a meaningful analysis. You're thinking about your thinking. You're living in the moment as you're trying to learn this new dance step. You want to make sure you've compensated for other problems, such as, the ones that are in a previous slide. You want to give your information, your new information, in small units. You want to space these units. Give yourself some cognitive rest time. You want to organize it, and you want to pace yourself. Some other strategies involve making sure that you relax, that you're focusing, that maybe you write it down, you repeat it to yourself out loud, because then you're using your auditory input as well. And you time the information. If you're a morning person, that's the time that you want to learn. Specific memory strategies to retrieve information, some of these things that you can use to cue yourself and pull information out of long-term memory. Notes, lists, calendar. Cue yourself, oral and written. Again, talk to yourself, write it down, organize it, keep things in the same place all the time. Put that activity into your daily routine, right? When you have vision loss, make notes large enough so that you can read it back to yourself, and if you can make it large enough not to use a magnifier, that's one less step that you have to worry about. The next three slides have to do with work that's been done with people with Alzheimer's or severe memory loss, and it looks at memories that remain longer. And I think it kind of gives us some ideas of how we process information, what kind of information will help us retain. If things like body memories, how do you ride a bike, skill memories like knitting, those stay with you even if you have Alzheimer's. So these kind of memories can help reinforce or enhance your vision as well, your vision loss. This is some more information about memory enhancers, keeping a personal calendar, use a computer. There's a lot of email alerts now that'll remind you of upcoming events. Keep important items like your house keys in the same places. You can use voice memos. There's a lot of different equipment out there that has reminders for you, alarms to remember when to use your medication, watches. Mnemonic devices are those devices that do help enhance memory. Here's an example. When you meet someone new, repeat that person's name back to him after you've been introduced. So example, Tom, nice to meet you, Tom. And that repetition will help put it in storage for you. You want to use your other senses. Multiple senses involve multiple areas of the brain and build connections. And don't forget, you want to enhance your vision. Make sure you're using your vision as best as you can. So get involved in vision rehab. Use different kinds of equipment that's been advised. Use your environment, make it more visible, and use large print cues. This is some example of environmental cues. This is our office here at Henry Ford. We have one door that's blue, one door that's yellow, so it readily your eye can pick up which office you want to go into. Make sure that your environment is well lit. Lighting is your friend. These are some examples of large print cues, large print calendar, big button phone, a high contrast clock, and those little eraser boards, that just reminds you of things that, you're going to be doing that day. Organizational strategies, keep all the materials that you're going to use for a specific task in one area, like this bin here with all the cleaning supplies. There's a picture here of a message center, which has a recorder, a big button phone, a magnifier light combination, and large print message page so that you can take down that message. And then examples of medication organizers. So see what size print you need so that you can readily even identify a single letter can be helpful. Examples of challenging activities, novel and complex, knitting, grandma always knitted, and now we're finding out why she did. There's a number of leisure activities that are done in large print, cards, crossword puzzles, that kind of thing. Then in summary, looking at memory and vision loss and how those two can help each other out and help you continue to do activities. First of all, keep your brain sharp. Keep your memory sharp. Use whatever cues you need. Meet the challenge of vision loss. Do what you can with the vision you have and use your other sensory systems as well. Stay active and mentally fit despite the vision loss. Find a way to do something. Don't just continue to give up activities. And keep in mind that vision loss can be a gift if you meet the challenge.
Thank you very much, Colleen O'Donnell. I appreciate so much your presentation this afternoon. And I want to thank everyone for the opportunity for me being here today, and I especially want to thank Dan Roberts for that, and also for the support from all the different groups out there. And I just have to mention that the International Macular Degeneration Support Group definitely is made possible by generous funding from Macular Degeneration Foundation, and that can be found at www.eyesight.org. And also Macular Degeneration Research at www.ahaf.org. And Dan Roberts, thank you for the opportunity of being here and a great presentation today. I want to turn it back over to you and just tell everyone, keep looking up.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Huggett, as usual, Colleen O'Donnell, for your outstanding presentation. Of course, all of our group facilitators, we look forward to seeing you all again in August. And until then, let's all remember Colleen's advice and take good care of the brains that we've been blessed with. Thank you, and we'll see you in August.